Yeah, 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 come and take a look at the snow. Bright white as far as your eyesight goes. Come and take a look at the fields of snow. I'll just get my coat, then we're good to go. Come and take a look at the lake. Let's have a quick skate before it gets late. Come and take a look at the frozen lake. Put your clothes on, mate, don't make that mistake. Ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Ba-ba-ba-ba.
Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 860 shopping days left. That can't be right. Hang on. Someone forgot to carry the zero. It's 86 shopping days left until Christmas. And I think you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. Hi, my name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight are my co-hosts, Johnny Five, the human robot.
860 days, lousy smarch weather.
I know, right? We got plenty of time to prepare, so you know, if those people who like to wait until the last day before Christmas, you've got some time. You've really got some time to kill. So, anyway, also with us tonight is Mr. Bradford is here as well. Brad, what's shaking?
And on the third day, Vinnie Vaughn rested because it was bad.
Brad, it sounded like you opened like three cans at once.
You're not wrong. My friends. That's what this movie deserves.
Bradford is shotgunning three for all of us out there tonight. But I need to hop in here, so.
One for the Father, one for the Son, and one for the Holy Spirit.
I'll be right back. My cat is eating something that's not food. I will be right back.
Oh, okay. Pray for J5's cat. Yeah, you have to leave one in the six pack for Jesus.
That's how this works. That's what they told me at church camp. How are you doing tonight, Joseph? You always ask us how we are doing, but we never extend the favor and ask you, how are you doing?
I am a large bundle of nerves constantly on the precipice of collapse, but
that
tonight
is
I'm doing fine.
Well, that's good.
Real quick, what are you drinking?
Can't
check.
I've broken kayfabe. I'm actually drinking seltzer water because I just had the world's biggest Korean barbecue meal. So I feel like the food coma is going to be enough to carry me through this one.
I think no one on earth would blame you for that. That sounds amazing.
How about yourself?
Well, since it's now officially October, I am drinking a Shiner Oktoberfest and loving it.
Lovely. That sounds great.
Went to my first Oktoberfest of the year last night. It was a lot of fun. Lots of German was sung. Lots of horrible, horrible dancing was performed. 'Tis the season to be merry, folks.
Sounds like a normal Tuesday night at my place.
Whoa.
Yeah,
you guys taking new tenants? I want to live there. Yeah. Wow. It's fucking like Catskills humor over here. Anyway, so tonight on the show, we are rounding out Vaughn-a-thon with Vince Vaughn's 2007 magnum opus, Fred Claus.
Unholy creation. Fred Claus.
Which
rated PG for Paul Giamatti.
Yes. So, going into this, I didn't actually know this was a children's movie. I didn't know this was a family film. I didn't notice that it was PG, and it did that mid-aughts thing. I know I always use the term mid-aughts, but it did the mid-aughts thing where it just has the bold sans-serif font that for like every raunchy comedy movie that came out between like 2002 and 2010, you know?
Yeah, it's another one of those fucking movies that just calls itself the feel-bad comedy of the season or whatever.
Yeah, basically. So I thought, for some reason, I thought we were going to get into, like, Bad Santa light territory, but that was not the case. My first tip-off was when the chase scene started happening with all of the Santas, and we are treated to cartoon sound effects. And I thought, wow, this is a really weird editorial choice for this scene. And yet, and throughout the entire rest of the movie, we are treated to cartoon sound effects.
The Foley artist for this film was, in fact, the director David Dudkin's cat, who just slept on the keyboard with all the wacky sound effects.
Well, yeah. Would it surprise you to learn that in the credits there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs credited to being from the Mouse Hunt soundtrack?
Really? Whoa, what?
And for that matter, end credits, Home Sweet Dump, Caesar's Big Drag, Flaming Dew, and main title From Mouse Hunt, written by Alan Silvestri, courtesy of DreamWorks SKG. Kids Miss the Old Life, and Even the Dog is Homesick from Cheaper by the Dozen.
I think the question that's on all of our lips now is, was somebody who was involved in Mouse Hunt involved in this film, or is somebody just the biggest fan of Mouse Hunt ever?
I think someone's just cutting corners and just searched for wacky music on, like, 2008 Google.
Little Brad didn't want to go see many films, like, didn't ask his family to go see many films during his childhood. But one of the ones that my child mind fixated on was Mouse Hunt. And I really wanted to go see Mouse Hunt. And goodness gracious, my long-suffering father, who also took me to see Pokemon the movie, took me to see Mouse Hunt. And I cannot tell you anything about that movie. So, good job.
Guess what? I also have a Mouse Hunt memory. Would you like to hear it?
Let's hear your... This is hashtag Mouse Hunt Memories. This is our new bit.
When my family moved to this town 20 odd years ago, this was the film that my mom took us to in this town to let us know that this town also has cool, fun things to do, like going to the movies. See, also
like Mouse Hunt.
Mouse Hunt.
This is a town where they only have bad movies. The town where only bad movies play.
Yeah. Like Fred Claus, because guess what, guys? I do have memories of seeing this. I take it back. I didn't see this in the theater, but I have memories of it being in the theater because I have promotional material from it when it was in theaters.
Was this during your time when you were working at a theater?
Would that be
why you have promotional material from this film?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, also, because like in the late 2000s, they would just release weird promo stuff for basically any movie that came out. And the table at our big theater just would dump all this stuff on the table. Please, we're begging you, take this crap off our hands.
This is garbage that nobody wants.
Like the two that I still have to this day, other than like a giant pile of mini posters for movies nobody remembers, I have a 2007 calendar from the film Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Oh god.
Mm-hmm.
Which depending on the
it's a 2007 calendar, so effectively entirely useless.
Well, until the next calendar year that corresponds, and you can just mark out the calendar date and sub in your own, you know, current time.
Right.
But the second thing that I definitely grabbed and threw in a drawer and had no reason to ever look at for 12 fucking years was the Fred Claus Activity Book of Fun.
You knew. Somewhere deep back in the recesses of your mind, you knew that this day would come.
This would be either a collector's item and I would get money for this, or I would make fun of it on a podcast about Christmas movies. Well, dear listeners, my chip has finally come in.
Can you break down the contents? I know you were kind enough to share photos of this with us in the chat, but...
Oh, yeah, and I'll put these online later, but I just want to talk about this for a little bit. It's basically like a bunch of folded 8 by 11 pieces of paper folded and stapled together. So it's kind of small.
Not even glossy.
Not even glossy, god damn it. So on the cover, we've got this horrible picture of Vince Vaughn riding a big wheel while... Paul Giamatti as Santa Claus looks on disapprovingly in the background, which this is like everything I hate about comedy. It's just Vince Vaughn acting like a giant toddler and someone looking on disapprovingly. It just makes me sick to my core. But it says it's Santa's activity book, and it crosses out Santa's and replaces it with the words Fred's. So like, originally this was Santa's. All right. So inside, the first page is a pretty generic, you know, connect the dots kind of game. You got a Santa Claus and you've got a snowman. You have to connect the snowflakes to make the picture. That's nice. That's cute. But on the second page is a word search, but not just any word search, because this word search only has two words repeated ad nauseum. The words naughty and nice. And the game is, how many times can you find the words naughty or nice?
Oh my goodness.
Such a lazy, like, What kind of game is that? Here's a word search. There are two words in it. Find them.
I don't even know if I was locked in a jail cell with this word search and a piece of, and a pencil. I don't know if I'd bother, honestly. I think I'd just be good sitting over in the corner. Like the opposite of fun.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and complain about this word search, because the way things like this work is usually you have a time limit that you give yourself, and you're trying to find as many words as you can in that time limit. And usually also to make it harder, the only letters in the puzzle are the letters that are in the words you're looking for. So the trick is that you're looking for the combination of the letters, not just, you know, not just like trying to single out a couple letters like you do in a normal word search. Because this one, just look for UGH and you're fine, because you found naughty, because... Why are there J's and Y's? Or why are there J's and F's and shit in this puzzle and X's?
So just look for
Look for ugh and ice.
Which is appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, with if it was all just those letters, it would these would not stick out like sore thumbs, but however they do. All right, so moving on. Page 3. We have a Fred and Santa crossword puzzle. And all of the clues are lines from the movie, but there's also a secondary, like, set of clues, which are all the words used as a word jumble. So if you couldn't be asked to watch the film and remember the lines, they got you covered.
Be sure to get some hints by watching the movie preview trailers on FredClaws.net.
I know where I'm going now.
I wonder if that still exists.
FredClaws.net. Here we go. Yeah, it redirects to WarnerBrothers.com/movies/Fred-Claws. So there it is. And unfortunately, it's just... there's the trailer. Here's where you can rent it.
I guess FredClaws.com was taken.
Am I going to regret this?
I might regret this.
Okay, why does FredClaws.com go nowhere, but FredClaws.net goes to the Warner Brothers site?
Site not installed.
What does that mean? It's not installed.
That's what I get.
I know, but what does that mean? I see it too.
Is not yet installed.
If it has just been created,
like the late 90s, where you'll get a paper that tells you go to a website, but the website is always like, go to my website at users.something.com/tilde @users/geocities/my name.
Oh my god. Well, now I have to see if FredClaws.com is available, because
how
if it is,
those of you checking us out at our new URL, FredClaws.com.
Well, FredClaws.com is unfortunately taken. However, the FredClaws.com is not. Also, FredClawsWeb.com, FredClawsNow.com, FredClawsShop.com, FredClawsWorld.com, and my favorite, FredClaws.love.
FredClaws.baby.
Please join me at my new dating site for hot young singles who enjoy the film Fred Claus.
Man.
Who do you stand in this film? Personally, I'm a Giamatti.
Only choose a number of profiles. They're either a Fred, a Giamatti, a Spacey.
You're either Willy or you're Ludacris or you're Kevin Spacey. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let's finish up this booklet real quick. There's not a whole lot to tell. It's fairly obvious stuff. The fourth page is Spot the Scrooge. It's like, which one of these 12 elves looks different? It's an easy game. And then there's a maze where Fred Claus has to find his way to the North Pole. That's a plot point in the movie.
It sure is.
There's a snowball fight, which is basically a game of dots, if you've ever played dots.
Yes.
If you're like me and you, yeah, I'm gonna just ignore that. I was gonna say something dumb.
Okay.
Yeah, the dots, and then on the other side, there's like a box matchup. Okay, that's fine too. And then finally, on the last page, how to fold ninja elf stars.
How to use the rest of the pages of this book if you're a 5 year, if you're a 5 to 10 year old child.
But also,
pretty much.
Also, the directions indicate that there is a special Fred Claus paper you can download at fredclaus.net, which does not appear to be the case.
Somewhere deep in the recesses of the internet. Archive.org. Ugh. All right. I'm going to do some deep digging. I'm going to try to find the Fred Claus Ninja Star paper JPEG.
All right. So while Brad is on paper JPEG duty, J5, do you want to help me cram out this... J5, do you want to help me bang out this plot?
Phrasing,
oh, yeah, man, for real.
I would much rather just look for the paper as well.
Nope, I took paper duty. Get bent. I also did the summary last time. And I will be the one ponying up the remainder for charity this time around.
Okay.
I nominate Joseph.
Oh, God. Okay. So I get 1 minute to describe the plot of this film, and whatever
is left of that minute
will be donated in dollars to a certain charity. On our last episode, on our Four Christmases episode, we did donate, I think it was $47 to our local Triad SPCA. So that's a very worthy cause. I almost said congratulations to them, but they didn't do anything for it.
What have they ever done for us?
I mean, they do a great service, public service, but that's beside the point.
Yes.
Okay, so I think it's only fair that Brad choose.
I will choose the cause, which will be announced on social a little bit later.
Sounds good. All right.
Let me set a timer here, and let me know when you're ready, and I'll count you off.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right.
I am ready, sir.
Ready, set, go.
Fred Claus is the older brother of Santa Claus, and the two had a falling out when they were kids because Santa Claus is super good, and Fred Claus just kind of resents him for that. So many years later, Fred Claus is a repo man and has to go up to the North Pole to make money so that he can bail himself out of jail and also work up a local business that he's trying to get off the ground. Meanwhile, Kevin Spacey shows up as a claims adjuster or an efficiency expert who wants to shut down the North Pole. But together with Santa's head off, Willie, Fred manages to save the North Pole from complete annihilation, and all the children of the world get toys. The end.
So you did it. We have 26 seconds remaining in the minute. So 26 seconds will go to a local charity. Maybe it'll be edited into the episode, but if not, check out our social media presence to know where that money is going. Thank you for playing, Joseph.
Twitter.com/ChristmasCreeps.
Yes. I felt like this plot is a lot more convoluted than Four Christmases.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of moving parts to this, so we can spend some time digging into it a little bit.
You could cut out so many of these moving parts, though.
That's the thing. Like, well, yeah.
Why does Fred Claus have an orphan child as a best friend?
Slam?
Yes.
Slam is a cool kid, though. Like, I enjoy Slam. He just doesn't have anything to do.
No, this isn't the movie he should be there. In, though. Why isn't he at the orphanage in one of the Santa Buddies movies?
You know what? That's perfectly valid.
I mean, the real obvious answer is that Slam was written into the film to show that Fred is still a good person.
Yeah.
Deep down. But I mean,
To be perfectly honest, Fred should have already been Slam's like stepdad, and he should have been in on the adventure from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I feel like as much of this film is sort of kind of accidentally geared towards children, we needed a kid to like help guide us into this world. Because otherwise it does kind of come off like a raunchy Vince Vaughn comedy that has to pull back on itself because it's Christmas.
Counterpoint, if Slam were Fred's sidekick throughout this entire film, we would be one step closer to this being a Santa Claus clone, which it already almost kind of is, except that Santa's not dead.
That's just like live action Arthur Christmas with the Santa Claus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, actually. Like it does so many of the same things of both of those films, like up to and including like we've harped on this before, having like the military industrial complex of the North Pole be a thing.
Yes.
Although it's not nearly as like convoluted and militaristic as those two films. Like, this is more just like, this is kind of the setup to show how elves can handle this kind of stuff. It's not overly, you know.
Probably the most interesting thing this film does is at the very beginning, and then it throws it completely out of the window, is we are treated to the fact that both of these characters were born in like the 16th century in Europe.
They were born in Skyrim.
Yeah. They were born in Skyrim.
This is a place that's not existed at all ever. They were born in Skyrim.
And then apparently, according to saint logic, when somebody becomes a saint, they become immortal, which, as far as my actual knowledge of sainthood goes, most of these people are murdered in some fashion, and that's how they became saints. So
yeah, the other part of sainthood is you have to be dead already.
Yeah, it doesn't really pan out that way. But apparently that extends to your entire family and any spouses of the family. Basically, the whole family line.
Yeah. So I have a question about this. I have a question about this.
Yeah, it raises a lot of questions that this movie is not prepared to answer.
Oh, not a single one of them. But here's my question. So Fred is the younger... No, Fred is the older brother, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And Nick is the one who is sainted and becomes Santa Claus, and when you become sainted, you are, as the movie explains it, like frozen in time as that age. So why the hell does Vince Vaughn look like a million years younger than his little brother?
I don't know. It's a very good question. There are a bunch of other really good questions, like, why is Mrs. Claus very concerned about Nick's weight when I guess it would affect his well-being, but couldn't he just starve himself and he wouldn't die because he's immortal? I don't understand.
Yeah, like the entire last act, like gambit of the film hinges on the fact that Santa Claus is sick and laid up in bed.
Right, but I don't know. Is this immortality, the effective immortality where you can be, you know, turned into basically your health can be a pile of garbage, but you just won't die, which sounds like a unique kind of torture, I guess?
I mean, basically... But
that would have happened a long time ago if he's 400 plus years old, you know?
Yeah. I mean, basically, he's a Highlander, and the reason he lives at the North Pole is so that nobody can find him and cut his head off, right? Like they all want the power. Vince Vaughn wants the power. He wants, you know, the unimaginable prize, but he just can't bring himself to kill his little brother.
The other very good question is how so Vince Vaughn the can little be orphan a the gigantic. Spaniard, then? Sorry?
This makes the little orphan Sean Connery then?
Yes. I mean, yeah, if they make a Fred Claus 2, he's just going to, like, walk out of a wall somewhere all of a sudden. Like, oh, yeah, I'm just in this film now. Hi, everybody. Brad, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
So the other question I have is, if Vince Vaughn has been alive for over 400 years, how is he still a gigantic man-child and not gained any dollop of wisdom whatsoever in the time that he's moved to Chicago, apparently?
Because when you have no consequences for any of your actions, you don't really learn anything.
Oh, I guess that's a good point.
Which is why when we meet,
I mean, look at Wyatt Coke. I mean, that's what happens.
Which is why when we meet him in the film, he's a repo man. Like, he's gone so far out of his way to like hate his brother that his job is to take stuff back from people.
He is the anti-Santy.
Oh, yes. Okay, so the actual legit real-life-ass plot of this movie hinges on the fact that Fred Claus is apparently trying to open, like, a sweepstakes parlor in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, like, off-track betting, I think, is the thing he said.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, what I'm imagining is, like, a sweepstakes place, and he points out how great the location is because it's across the street from, like, the Chicago equivalent to Wall Street. I don't know.
Yeah.
And he has to come up with like 50 grand. I don't know is the real sort of raison d'etre here. I don't know. But he has to come up with the cash. So he starts trying to grift people out of their Salvation Army donations. And when that lands him in jail, he has to use his one phone call to call his brother to bail him out of jail. His brother, Santa Claus, has to pay $5,000 for this bail money.
See, you've already completely forgotten the female lead of the movie.
Yeah, there's a whole plot with his girlfriend.
How irrelevant she is to this fucking story.
It is so inconsequential.
Listen.
You could have written her out and it would have been the same film.
Oh, so because I'm the one who wrote her out, I'm the asshole. Okay. No, no. I'm just trying to get us from A to B in as fast a fashion as we can. Look, Charitable Cause X already has my money. I'm just trying to move things along here. But you're right.
No.
His on and off girlfriend is Rachel Weisz, who is amazing and fantastic, and she honestly needs more than four lines in this entire film. But she's just feared to be the girlfriend.
Like a traffic cop, like a meter reader.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Yes.
And their relationship is basically built on him lying to her, pretty much.
For 3 years, he's been doing this.
And then getting really good charisma roles when he apologizes to her, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
It's the worst. So there's very little consequence to that plot. I'll let you guess how it ends up at the very end, and you would be right. So
I just want a tangent, though. That restaurant that he, like, said they were going to go to that he never showed up to, how is that not the coolest fucking place ever, and I want to go there now?
What is
The Bonsai Palace?
Yeah, it's what if Benihana also had sumo wrestlers in a bamboo cage in the middle of it?
It's the worst.
It's the greatest. It's... What are you talking about?
Apparently there were fart noises that I couldn't hear because I had my volume turned too low, but it was in the captions.
Oh, yeah, I rented this on YouTube, and it was just very hard to hear it at all. I had, like, headphones in, volume on the computer turned up, volume on YouTube turned up, all the volumes I could turned up, and it was still, like, I was straining to hear it.
All the volumes. Yeah, the sound mix on this is really weird, but then they definitely crank up all of the licensed music that I have to assume they spent most of their money on, because there's a lot of licensed music in this.
Because whenever it shows up, the movie stops and plays the entire song. It does. I don't think this movie needs Surfin' Bird in it at all, let alone all of Surfin' Bird, but it definitely has it.
It's, damn it, we paid for the license, we're gonna use it.
But they do play Christmas rapping for, like, almost its entirety, which I have to, like, commend them for that, because, like, that's a fucking banger right there.
It's a good song that is underutilized, but it should have been in a better film than this.
This god-awful 116-minute-long comedy movie, because, like, a good half an hour of that was musical numbers with nothing happening during them other than slapstick, you can just, like, oh, cool, I'm watching this on YouTube, playback double speed, then I finish the movie in an hour and a half.
There you go. Hey, speaking of production budget spent on music, this movie cost $100 million.
Good God. There's no way they made that back.
I'm done.
The G7 nations of the world paid five times less than this to try and save the rainforest. Did y'all remember that from, like, a month ago when, like, the most rich and powerful countries in the world pledged $20 million together to save the rainforests? And Fred Claus, meanwhile, is over here costing $100 million.
Joe.
Yes, sir.
I didn't need to hear this. I knew down in my heart of hearts such things as this were true. But there's some things that I just don't need to hear said out loud, and this is one of them.
So far, now that I think about it, the only good character we've watched in any movie has been Rudy from Reindeer Games, who, when given a giant fucking sack of money, is just like, no one needs this much money. Everyone have a little bit.
Yeah, you're right, you know? Because, like, at the end of the day, all a person needs to do is just take a Santa sack full of money and just dump it into people's mailboxes. I don't care that it's a federal crime, but it's on the Christmas...
On Christmas,
it's the right thing to do.
Someone said something on Twitter about it recently, and it's pretty much accurate. There's basically nowhere on earth you could live where you wouldn't be able to, like, basically live a good life on, like, $300,000 a year. You don't need more than that. And if you have more than a couple of million, like, you have to try to lose money, as long as you're, like, investing at least part of it in a fucking savings account, if nothing else.
Right.
Like, you don't, even if you're, like, stupidly rich still, you don't even need that much money to just have your money perpetuate itself. What I'm saying is, there is no moral reason not to be, like, guillotining Jeff Bezos as we speak. I'm not inciting violence, saying people should go out and do that. I'm just saying there's really no reason why we aren't.
The man who decided he wouldn't, he could, has enough money to let everybody live pretty comfortably and not end world hunger and starvation and all that, but he decided to use rocket ships because he can't possibly see any other use for his money. We're going to terraform Mars.
We're going to terraform Mars at the expense of Mars forming Earth.
I would like someone to run over Elon Musk with one of those terraforming bulldozers.
Just brick him up in the big tube that he's building under San Francisco. Like Cask of Amontillado, that fucker. Hey, Elon Musk, we've got a new brand of flamethrower down here. You've got to try it. You have to try it.
Yeah, it has so pictures good. Of both Rick and Morty on it.
Anyway, all let's right. talk about Fred Claus some more.
It's not the movie. I want to live in a world where this movie doesn't exist, but I know that I live in the world where this movie definitely does exist.
I mean, okay. Here's a good question. Why does this movie exist? I see that Vince Vaughn is like co-producer on it, so obviously that's part of the reasons. I read, I think on Wikipedia, that it's alleged to be adapted from a poem called The Story of Santa and His Brother Fred.
Mm-hmm.
But why is this nearly 2 hours long then?
Like, I know.
I was looking at this, like, it's a 2 hour long comedy movie. The only thing I can think of is, oh, if this was slavishly adapted from a book, that would make sense. But no, it's based off of a fucking poem.
And the writer, like, pretty easily copped to the fact that that Fred's name is Fred because they were watching The Godfather, and Fredo just sounded like a good name.
Oh, so Fred Claus is named after the N-word for Italians. I got it.
Yep. Baruni.
I love that story so much. Someone's little idiot fail son is trying to tell people, hey, calling me the name of the little idiot fail son of The Godfather is racism.
Yeah. There's everything about this movie just reminds us how terrible our own hellish existence is.
It's, you know, they'd say true art is a mirror. This isn't true art, but it is certainly a mirror, isn't it?
It certainly
is. Can we talk about the really bad crowd animations and the terrible walk cycles for the elves? It's like, oh,
okay. Have you seen those? We need to talk about the elves in general right now, because these motherfuckers are the creepiest thing I've ever seen in this or any film.
All right.
It's very bad. Go ahead and tell us about the elves, Joe.
To go back onto the tracks real quick, let's get us to the North Pole. Yeah, he's fucking around with his girlfriend and not really committing to any relationship with her. He gets arrested for trying to grift a bunch of Salvation Army Santas and getting into a fight in a toy store. He uses one call to call her, but then this Christmas he gets a second call. He calls his brother Fred, who offers to bail him out and give him the money to buy his off-track betting place, only if he agrees to come to the North Pole and work this Christmas.
Right.
And pretty much only because Mrs. Claus twisted his arm, otherwise he would have given it up.
Yeah, he would have just straight up just given his brother the money, because deep down, guess what? Saint Nick is actually a good person.
But you know who are not good people? The people who came up with and animated these elves.
So the head elf in this movie, Santa's head elf, is named Willie, and he's played by John Michael Higgins' head on a child's body.
I can't with any of this.
This movie invented deep fakes. I'm calling it.
Is it a child's body, or is it like, so they've taken footage of children's and they've jib jabbed people's heads onto the top of them? Like,
I would rather heads. They just used Mickey from Seinfeld again.
And they kind of oh man, Eli should have shown up in this. He really should have.
They're all the same fucking movies anyway, so who cares?
Right. But I mean, so it's a combination of little people and adults wearing goofy costumes in, you know, sort of forced perspective settings. Yeah, sets.
Ludacris was one of them.
Yeah. Yes. But then also there's just like small people, I'm assuming either children or other little people, with the actual famous people's heads superimposed on them, and it always looks creepy.
And then there's one full-size fucking adult working there, too. Santa's Little Helper, Charlene. Is there any sort of acknowledgement or explanation of why she's just normal human height, but she's at the North Pole?
Because they tried to make her... very male-gazy. They tried to make her look sexy, and it would just be... They tried in the tests, and it didn't work.
Because one of the producers has a Goliath fetish, or whatever you call it.
Oh man! Like, but with a low cut top, I don't think that would work very well with like the weird Frankenstein stuff that they're pulling off.
I think of is because this movie is some like true story of the Three Little Pigs ass shit about Santa's brother that she's actually like Buddy the Elf's sister that nobody talks about.
I mean, the only reasonable like real world explanation is that it's Elizabeth Banks and you don't monkey with
Elizabeth Banks.
You don't monkey with perfection is basically what I'm getting at. She just looks too good. Anyway, let's move on. So the actual plot, like there's already a plot to this movie. Like Fred Claus goes up to the North Pole and starts raising hell with his brother. Then another plot shows up.
Kevin Spacey shows up in this movie to be a sexual predator.
Yes. The plot number two shows up to do basically nothing. His job is to basically inspect
the North. Who
the
fuck is he working for?
The
board is what it's called. That's it.
You know,
that's all we get.
But yeah, he just works for the board, and they're going to shut him. They're going to shut down the North Pole if Santa Claus is issued 3 strikes while Kevin Spacey is there, which seems very arbitrary. Like, they could be doing great, but if the 3 little things fuck up, oh, that's it, you're done. But there are ulterior motives here, though.
This really is...
There are Judge Reinhold and the Santa Claus motives.
There are some very... Yeah, exactly. This movie cribs so hard from the Santa Claus.
Okay.
All right.
But no, for real, who is he working for?
The board.
Quote unquote. Who would have like some sort of like supervisory thing over controlling Christmas? He works for Jesus.
Well, you know, when Brad said the board, when Brad said the board a minute ago, I thought my Skype fucked up and I thought he said the Lord. And I was just going to say, yeah, that's
the Lord
that.
Is the head of the board.
The Lord of the board.
Okay, now you're both just saying the Borg.
The Lorg of the Borg, yeah. Santa will assimilate, or else, to the non-denominational holiday celebration. Or so help us.
I guess we are slightly blessed that this whole rigmarole doesn't get into the Christmas spirit as a magical power that powers everything, because that's overplayed.
Oh, yeah. When Fred has to play Santa Claus at the end of the film and go into overdrive to make sure that it's done, he just does it. Like, it's not even a question. He just does it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thankful there's no J.O. crystals, because you know Vince Vaughn powers his J.O. crystals by jacking off into a mirror. Like, he just stares at himself while he does it.
That's how you know he has J.O. crystals, because he's too embarrassed to put it in his own film.
How many bad shots are there of, like, Vince Vaughn from a low angle where you can see his chin and it's just, oh, it's the worst.
Yeah, like this entire film was kind of shot at the perspective of a child and or elf.
So that's my first question for you, and we've already grazed upon this a little bit. Who is this movie for? It's ostensibly for little kids, but still, come on.
Okay, I'm gonna tell y'all a secret that I kind of hate to admit, but it was reiterated to me earlier today. This is one of my mom's favorite Christmas movies.
Oh my goodness.
This is a film for mothers who like their Christmas films to have a little bit of a dumbass edge to it. Mom, I love you, but I'm sorry, that's the truth.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Joseph's mom, but this is a bad movie.
And it's not even that it's, like, offensive. It's just really, really dumb, and it thinks it's hilarious. Which describes Vince Vaughn perfectly. It's very dull. And Okay, let's just get back into the plot, because we'll wander into some dumb shit here in a minute.
All right, so three strikes. The first strike is immediately when Vince Vaughn gets into a fight with Ludacris, the DJ elf, and puts
yes,
on...
that correctly.
does he put on just some generic music, or does he actually put on a song? I forget.
He puts on Rubberneckin' by Elvis.
Okay. And then all of the elves immediately stop working in order to dance, because...
Oh, like, well, it's like a funk remix of it, but still...
Because they're not allowed to have fun ever, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what prompts this is that, like, he keeps playing the same song, the same, like, Christmas song over and over and over again. Like, different elves keep requesting this one song and dedicating it to other elves ad nauseum.
And so the efficiency expert comes in and is like, oh, Santa doesn't have control over his elves. Strike one. Then we get into Fred's job. The job he's given is he gets to sit in a little room and... he's evaluating all of the profiles to give them a naughty or a nice stamp.
And then, Kevin Spacey, what's his name again in the actual film?
Clyde Northcutt.
Clyde
Northcutt comes in and overnight and shreds the copy, like shreds all these files. And then the second strike is that there are no backup copies, which is a crock of BS. And this is the plot hole that bothers me. We're going to get into Brad's technical complaining corner right now. Brad's technical complaining corner. That's the theme. In the film, there is a giant surveillance snow globe where you can call up anybody's name. But that is not germane. The biggest point is on the back, there is a murder board of the 10 naughtiest kids. That would mean that there's somewhere at the North Pole, there is a database keeping track of naughty or nice points. All of The Good Place started its new final season. Bless. I actually watched that after I watched this movie as a bit of a palate cleanser. Point being, if there is a database of kids naughty or niceness, why is this file system needed? And why is it the only source, if there's also the digital live readout? I don't get it.
Because some of the stuff that he's shredding is like the kids' letters to Santa. Like, Santa, I want this for Christmas. And then you see, okay, we haven't even gotten into this, the giant magical snow globe that they have that they can use basically as a cloud computing system to call up any child on the face of the earth and potentially find out what they want for Christmas.
Yeah, but that's not what bothers me. I mean, I guess he does shred their letters of what they want, but I think the bigger implication is Vince's whole job or Fred's whole job is to sit there reading a file and then to stamp whether or not they're naughty or nice. But they should already know that based on the information that they're already pulling up in a situational awareness system. It's the worst.
No, yeah, absolutely. Like, and I got the impression right away that Fred's job was strictly like a busy work kind of a job.
Yeah, for sure. Like, but then they make it into a major plot point that those are the only records.
Exactly.
Yeah, and then when Fred like basically goes rogue and just stamps everything nice because fuck it, why calling kids naughty is the most dickish thing you possibly can do. It ruins everything.
But it ruins everything from an actuarial standpoint, not from like a weird moralistic standpoint.
Yeah,
he stamps all the kids nice, so now they have to produce presents for every kid, which the factory does not have resources for. Like, that's what gets them in the most trouble.
Here's my biggest problem with every single fucking Santa goddamn movie like this.
Okay,
so you have Santa with all these fucking powers to do all this bullshit, all the shit, like everything. There's not a Santa that can simply just fucking slow down or stop time. Because that's how does Santa deliver all presents in one night? Because he fucking stops time and it takes him like fucking 4 weeks to actually do it, you know? And then it can tie in because like, yeah, as a kid, like, what's the longest night in the world? The longest night in the world is Christmas Eve.
Right.
This movie is weird with its like Santa delivery system because it implies that there is Santa is not magic.
Or not magic like in the way that we think of it.
Like, he has to physically climb down the chimney and eat the cookies and deliver the presents. And just somehow, I guess through time dilation or something, he's capable of doing all of this. Mm-hmm. But it's not ever addressed. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, and also, like, the whole, like, eating the cookies thing, it just put immediately into my mind that, like, okay, they're immortal, so the, like, eating a bazillion cookies in one night is not going to do anything to his metabolism whatsoever. Like, that's just, that's the magic we're working with here.
Or he just gets immortal diabetes.
Well, listen, if all immortals had diabetes, there would be no insulin left for the rest of us.
That's true.
That's how it is. But I'll say, okay, I want to bring up Elf for just a moment. And we've talked about...
You're going to take Elf off the shelf? Thank you.
Wow, Brad, shut up.
Sorry.
No, I want to mention Elf just for a minute because, like, we haven't really touched on Elf much yet. We might in the future someday, hint, hint. But one of the things I do like about that film and the way it handles its kind of Santa myth is that when Santa's bag fills up per house, so like in every house he goes to, it just like auto-generates whatever stuff that he's going to deliver. Mm. How that happens, I don't know, but it's like one of those like, okay, this makes like magic logistical sense to me, because otherwise you've got a Santa Claus with a gigantic sack sitting in a sleigh, and that looks silly and dumb. Like, yeah. Just from
The ones with the book that they have to read out of to get all of the listings and check them all off.
What, you mean like this film?
Yeah, like this film.
I'm just thinking, now I just want to like sit a kid down and just try to explain Santa to them and find out where the Santa bullshit threshold is. Like, what level of like, wait, that doesn't logistically or logically work. Can you explain away with magic before the kid's satisfied? Like, okay, this makes sense now. Because like, Santa can't just like teleport the presents into your house. That wouldn't make sense. Someone has to bring the presents to the house. Otherwise, it would make sense for them just to appear there. But Santa can't just go through the front door because it's locked. Oh, obviously he goes down the chimney.
What if you have no chimney, John?
Well, then obviously you don't get presents.
We get Santa Claus territory where a chimney magically appears in your living room.
The living room of your apartment that you live in with your single dad, yeah. No, that's a legit good point though. Like, and I don't have the answer for that. Like, I don't have kids, so I don't have to worry about explaining this.
Brad,
right,
get
now.
Back to us in about 3 years.
I'll let you know.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise, this show will be here for you to answer those questions, Brad.
Charles.
Hey, Brad. Why don't you just talk to give Charles the Santa talk right now,
Charles? I just want you to know there's a man in a red suit that comes into your house, invades our house every Christmas Eve, and he brings us presents that we don't have to pay for some reason. And that man's Santa Claus, so long as you be good and don't poop on the rug too much, he's gonna bring you presents, okay? All right.
Bye, Charles. So just to jump back real quick, I notice on the IMDb soundtrack listing that the song that they're dancing to in the factory scene is literally called Fred's Factory Dance.
What?
So it must be an original song.
Oh dear.
Good Lord, this movie. So okay, let's talk about Kevin Spacey now, because that's like one of the elephants in the room, and I don't want to, but we have to. Particularly like his grind against Santa is that it's an odd sequence too. Like, when Santa figures out what he's doing and why he's doing it, it gave me a very uneasy feeling. Basically, he's here at the North Pole to shut down Santa Claus because when he was a child, he asked for a Superman cape for Christmas and didn't get it. And then Santa goes through this entire speech where he's basically cluing out what it was he wanted and why he wanted it. And it's basically, you know, he was a little kid and he was bullied because of his glasses, and he wanted to be like Superman because Superman doesn't wear glasses. And because he didn't get that, he became this weird corporate supervillain, which is cute and funny because Kevin Spacey played Lex Luthor in a Superman movie.
I get it.
Like, so they engineer this entire thing to basically be a reference to Superman, which is a Warner Brothers product. And it's just so tired, and I don't need it. None of us needed it. This movie did not need to have a villain. It's already, like, a family, an angsty family kind of Christmas movie. We don't need a villain, do we?
Yep. We need the villain to unite the brothers together. Oh, okay. This movie also doesn't understand time zones, which bothers me. During the delivery scene, we're treated... God, I'm sorry. I'm just turning... Basically, when I return to this podcast, whenever I return, I'm just going to be friggin' Andy Rooney or whatever his name was. Or just it's Brad's complaining corner. Or I'm going to be the Neil deGrasse Tyson of Christmas movies.
Just going to be a nitpick Nancy, aren't you?
Nitpick Nancy. I'm sorry. Okay, I'll leave it. Time zones are really bad. They're in the dark in Japan in one scene, and they're immediately in the dark back in the United States.
Which movie was it where they were basically racing the sunrise? Because that was handled a lot better.
It was Arthur Christmas, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Where the final like present is literally being delivered like 2 seconds before sunrise.
Yes.
Yeah,
they do that here. They're like, we have until 4:30 or 5:24 a.m. But it's like, no.
And there's that really, really weird, tense little sequence where they're flying and Willie sees the sunrise and he's like, Fred, we don't have time. And Fred's like, shut up, I know. Like, oh my God, they're actually trying to like make this dramatic and serious.
And the worst part about it is they have a line with that too where he's like, that's the time of sunrise at the North Pole. And it's like, no, it isn't. The sun doesn't rise at the North Pole during the winter, you dingus.
Yeah, this movie and 30 Days of Night don't agree with each other.
Yeah, we have day scenes at the North Pole in December as well. Oh, I hate this movie. Sorry. Okay. Get it right. Sorry.
So, okay. John, go ahead.
North Pole should be invaded by vampires right now because it's night there all the time.
Hang on. Why would the vampires invade the North Pole?
To kill Vince Vaughn.
Okay, you know what? I'm down for that.
Okay.
Okay. There are exactly two scenes in this film that I like, and they're very close to the end of the film. And I feel like we can talk about those. All right. So the first, though, like, Fred is, like, shunned and sent away from the North Pole because he fucked up and everybody fucked up and everything's going bad. And then he goes to a Siblings Anonymous meeting where people can go to this, you know, support group and vent their feelings about their brothers. And we get this very, like, you hear a person talking and you, like, you know it's the setup to a joke, but you're not entirely sure what the punchline is yet. And it's a guy talking about how much he hates his brother and, you know, such and such happened and this and that. And then they cut to the reveal.
You guessed it, Frank Stallone.
Which is a joke from, like, 1994 at best. I don't know why they thought a Frank Stallone poll would be funny in 2007, let alone 2019. Does anyone know who Frank Stallone is anymore?
Post Malone?
Frank Stallone is an incredibly racist guy on Twitter now, basically. But other than that, the last time I thought about him was every time Norm Macdonald mentioned him on Weekend Update.
Yeah, pretty much. But so then we have this entire sequence where it's just famous, quote unquote, famous brothers, or the brothers of famous people coming together to rail against their famous brothers. And like, all right, so who did we get? We got Frank Stallone. That's okay, fine. I'll accept it. Then we get Roger Clinton, Bill Clinton's half brother. And then finally we get Stephen Baldwin.
I'm gonna guess that like Eric Roberts threatened to kill them when they called him with this.
Oh man, like I don't even know who we could have even had to like replace them in this because it's an okay joke, but is Frank Stallone the best you can do? And the crickets imply that it is. I don't know, you guys. I don't have anything to give you about this scene. It's just a scene
I did like Stephen Baldwin's performance, and it was very good. It was probably the best part of the movie was Stephen Baldwin getting mad at Alec.
Yeah, he's yelling at Fred Claus, and he's like, they're telling him to stomp it out, and he's like, stomp. He's like, that, like, tell him to recite the line. That's not Alec.
Yeah, that was good.
It was a little much.
That was a good one.
And then fuck it, the actual like the scene that I do like that is a good like Christmas scene. It's at the end of the film when Fred has delivered all of the presents successfully and it's Christmas morning. And then all of the elves run to the big snow globe to watch everybody open their presents on Christmas morning. That's like a legit good representation of like the all of the happy feels you get on Christmas morning. Yeah, and I kind of appreciated that.
That ties into one thing Fred did too. When they were talking about, okay, Santa's grounded because he threw out his bike getting into a snowmobile/snowball fight with Fred. Fred's like, okay, we can still do this. Yes, Joe, we got to give literally every kid on Earth a present now instead of just the ones we decide are nice enough. What's the easiest thing to do? Everyone gets a baseball bat or a hula hoop. And
yeah,
his reasoning is kids don't really care what they get as long as they get a thing. Like, the fun part of a present is opening it.
And I mean, like, he's kind of not entirely wrong. Like, part of the excitement and fun of Christmas is just like the knowing that you might get something. So he's on the right track, but then he lands on baseball bat and hula hoop, which for kids who live in like small apartments in a large city, probably not the best gift. Especially if half the kids are actually naughty and he's going to give that kid a baseball bat. That's a recipe for disaster, if you ask me.
I guess it's also implied that they gave away the stuff that they'd already manufactured early in the year. Yeah. There's like an example of an orange bike and that shows up in that scene or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, like they already had some of the presents like ready to go.
Well, then again, I would say that this movie is, I don't think this movie is actually trying to make this argument, but it ends up making it that the only difference between naughty and nice kids is that someone says this kid is naughty, that kid is nice.
I mean, it kind of is. Like, Fred has that whole sequence where he basically has to explain to his brother that like, you know, some kids aren't naughty, they're just misunderstood or they're having a bad time, which is a perfectly valid reason and excuse. Like, to pigeonhole kids into naughty or nice is kind of messed up on its face.
And then that ties back into our Kevin Spacey plot.
Right.
Where it is revealed that he had asked for the Superman cape and did not receive it. And Santa, Paul Giamatti, makes good on this by giving him the cape later, which is, again, very much the plot of What's-His-Face from Santa Claus.
Yeah, giving Neil from the Santa Claus of an Oscar Mayer weenie whistle.
Yeah, that. And then brings him over into the fold, into their side.
Brings him back to the light.
Save Christmas.
Yes.
Everything
is joyous. Everyone is safe. But then that last scene where like all of the elves are standing around the giant snow globe and watching kids open presents is kind of lovely. Like, I'm not gonna really complain about that one too much.
There's also a D plot that we haven't mentioned where Willy is trying to woo Carla. Is it Carla?
Charlene,
the accountant. And he eventually does, because this is a children's movie, and of course he does, so that's cool.
It's time for him to step up onto a chair and be a man.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I was very proud of that little gag I just put there. Anyway, let's move on. So Fred Claus is a kind of a depressing experience, and I'm sorry that I put you guys through this nightmarish hell world.
Is a movie.
It's way longer than it should be because of two simple reasons. Because Vince Vaughn keeps Vince Vaughning, and because there are several times where it decides to have an entire song rather than continue the story.
And also, just because this was like the heyday of Judd Apatow comedies that are 2 hours long for no reason. So everybody thought they could pull that off. And guess what, guys? You don't need 2 hours to tell jokes. You really don't.
No, let's
establish the rules. How long is a comedy allowed to be? How long is a drama allowed to be?
A comedy should not dip into triple digits.
Yeah, I'd say 90.
Yes, I'd say for a comedy, max. 90 is ideal. 80 to 99 is the acceptable range.
Like I'm fine with that.
Even if you could get it in under it like a tight 70, I wouldn't be mad in this day and age either, honestly.
Yeah, if you're going all killer, no filler, just joke, we're done. I'd allow that. Yeah, but if you're only gonna be 70 minutes, like you better make use of that 70 minutes.
Yeah. How about dramas?
I mean, at a certain point, dramas just become television. So,
yeah,
it's the limit is basically whatever Martin Scorsese says it is, because he's getting ready to drop like a 4-hour movie on Netflix.
Oh, neat.
Yeah,
I'm gonna say if you're getting any longer than 2 hours and 15 minutes, you're probably doing something wrong.
I mean, in general, yes. Like 2 hours, you should be sufficient for most stories.
I feel like you're going to reach diminishing returns on a lot of that after you reach that mark, definitely. 2-hour mark, beyond that, you're already starting to lose me.
You'd better have a damn good reason.
Basically. I have put off watching a lot of movies based on the sheer fact that they run into like 200 plus minutes. And I cannot cotton to that in this day and age.
Wonder
Woman is a fantastic film. Still have not gotten around to it because apparently it's over 2 hours long. Most of the Marvel films, and the reason I haven't watched any of those.
But on the flip side, like I have watched more films recently that are like 90 minutes and less, purely because of the short running time and the smaller time investment.
Yes,
you know I'm more willing to give those films a chance.
Yes,
like when I went to see. What was it recently? Ready or Not, which is kind of an action comedy kind of horror vibe sort of film. But like when I found out it was sort of 90 minutes and change, like, oh, hell yeah, I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
Give me all that you got.
So refreshing in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then Thread Claws is 5 minutes shy of 2 hours. And there's absolutely no reason. Not a single reason for it.
Right? I don't think Wonder Woman's 200 minutes. I know somebody will probably know about that on Twitter. It's over 2 hours, though.
It's 2.5 at best, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, gents, that's Fred Claus, and it's an experience.
It's an experience you should not subject yourself to experiencing.
Yeah, no, not even like bad enough to be like, holy shit, check this train wreck out. There's no reason to watch it. There's no reason...
And we explicitly saved this one for last because we thought Four Christmases would be better than this, and we were wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete waste of Paul Giamatti. You hate to see it.
Yes, yes it is. You do hate to see it. I mean, and a lot of movies that we watch... Mm-hmm.
I was going to start this podcast by singing Deck the Paws with Giamatti, but this movie just depressed me so much, there's no way I could do it.
Yeah, and a lot of movies we watch have sort of, even if they're bad, they have bright spots, I would argue. This movie, I would say, does not really have, other than maybe the siblings anonymous scene, I don't think this really has any bright spots. Don't even bother YouTubing,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
scenes.
I mean,
it's
yeah,
not,
it's nothing that's not done better-ish in other places. Like, you can get the sentiment better somewhere else. You can get the comedy better somewhere else.
It is very Christmassy, though.
Yeah, like, if you're just in it for snow and Santa Claus and Christmas lights, you get your fix. That's for sure.
Which takes us to the patented Crank-O-Meter.
Hell yes. Let's do it, friends. So the Crank-O-Meter is our patented XY-axis scale for rating Christmas movies. Our scale goes... Okay, so the X-axis is how Christmassy a film is, Christmosity, if you will, and the Y-axis is the quality quotient, to tell you how good a film is. So let's score this puppy on the Crank-O-Meter. Gentlemen, how Christmassy is Fred Claus?
It is very Christmassy. I would argue... maybe a 3 or a 4, and my reasoning for this is it is all about the Claus family, and if that whole legend didn't exist, and Christmas didn't exist, you probably couldn't have this film. Also, it takes almost entirely takes place at the North Pole, which is, as we all know, a very Christmas, probably plus one or two Christmas points right there.
Yeah, and it doesn't do anything like egregiously wrong with the Christmas message either. In this movie, the message is that Christmas is about basically being happy, pretty much.
Yeah, there is not a strong message. There's not a strong moral or message in this film at all, other than you gotta love your family, I guess. Yeah, because I mean, they're family.
Well, I say this movie, it doesn't really get into what the right thing is, but it definitely knows what the wrong thing is, and I'll give it credit for that.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess that's moral enough, I suppose.
And it's
and I guess it is a good moral to say, you know, to paint in such shades of black and white and give those who may need something, deny people who may need something just because they are the way they are is messed up, which is something a lot of people could learn from, I guess.
Right. But people aren't like inherently, well, most regular normal people are not like inherently naughty or nice. There are always circumstances and always things we don't know. So
yeah,
Fred Claus understands
just showing
that.
Showing a little bit of kindness can bring out the good side of them. Mm-hmm. All right.
So
it's
I think
very Christmassy.
It is very Christmassy, and I want to, at least a 3, because it gets enough of it right without getting any of it wrong.
Yeah.
But
I almost want to edge it up to a 4, my friends.
I'll go with 4.
You know what? Yeah,
it's
like
got all the trees. It's got all the music. It's
there's
got
lots
all the
of good
trappings.
Music. So I'm gonna agree. Yeah, a 4 is a perfectly fine number.
I mean, Ms. Joe's mom loves it, and it's probably because it's Christmassy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
You get what it does. What it says on the tin. It's
it
Fred
does
Claus.
What it says on the tin.
It's very It's very that, Christmassy.
Yes. So yeah, a 4 is good enough. It's fine. It's great. So now on the y-axis, how good is Fred Claus? And this is going to be a little trickier. Because it's not.
it's real bad.
Like, this film finds a way to waste Kathy Bates, and that's hard to do.
We literally
just now remembered Kathy Bates was in the movie.
It also wastes Paul Giamatti. Like, ugh.
Yeah, fucking it's Negan bad. Was in this movie, too.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he? Oh, God. That's right. What's the guy's name? Jeffrey Dean Morgan. He's in the film just long enough to hit on Rachel Weisz, and then he's out.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, yeah. But, yeah, from the weird CG on the elves' faces to the weird, needless, like, double antagonist plot to the sheer presence of Vince Vaughn. I would say this film doesn't deserve any more than maybe a -2. And even I'm
being generous. Oh, this is going to the negatives. What are you talking about?
-3 at least, maybe a -4.
No. I'm not going to give it the dignity of a -4 or -5. This movie did not inspire any strong feelings, good or bad, in me. It just was fucking there.
I guess you're right.
You're right. It really is like the quintessential like mid to late 2000s like expensive comedy that does and says absolutely nothing. So
like
yeah.
I know I'm probably contradicting myself previously because I know I go back and forth between like what's worse, being bad or being boring, and this was more boring than bad.
I think being boring is worse than being bad. Honestly,
it didn't piss me off. I'll say that. You know.
Yeah, like a bad movie, we can at least hopefully spin some gold out of. A boring movie, we just kind of have to sit there and go, guys, what the hell? But and that's kind of what we did here on this episode. And I guess I'll cap this y-axis thing off by saying my last note that I took was a note about how much of a Bush era comedy this was when Kevin Spacey tells all the elves they're fired and tells them to take the next bus back to quote Elfistan or wherever the hell you're from. That is...
Oh, this is a kid's movie. It was wherever the heck you're from, Joe.
Oh, are you sure?
No cussing.
Was this... Okay, let's compare this to the Santa Claus. I think the Santa Claus just had a bunch of children playing elves for the most part, correct?
Yeah, they were just children.
Yes.
Is that better or worse than just having a bunch of weird bad CGI, like, people shortened from, down.
From what standpoint?
Do you find it like creepier or worse or whatever? If you have a Christmas movie, you're like, who are we going to get to play the elves? And the options are, we'll get a bunch of kids and just say, oh, they're ageless. Or like, yeah, we'll just get some people and just make them look shorter.
The child elves always creeped me out in a way, I think. But also, the CGI elves are very bad. I think it's Sophie's choice, really.
I think for the CGI elves, because at least then we avoid that airplane ass shit, which was funny when Airplane did it in like 1970. Of just like, look, the kids are acting like adults. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, like what I was gonna say was like I would prefer the child elves with the caveat that you don't make a joke about Tim Allen accidentally hitting on the child elves.
Yeah, that was bad. And then they also had that weird, they had like infants that were supposedly elves, but apparently they're like infants that have lived for 10,000 years, which is a bit odd.
What kind of a hell do you have to have made for yourself where you are a centuries old toddler or baby?
I'm
what
a
did
500
you do
year
in your
baby.
Previous life that you now exist as a baby who for the last 300 years has shit his pants at the North Pole?
Like, why are we talking about vampires again? Because now we're just talking about Kirsten Dunst in like Interview with a Vampire.
I mean,
why do Santa and vampires have so much in common?
Because they live forever and only work at night.
And they're also kind of weird elves. The CGI elves are really bad, though. Like,
and they want nothing more than the
shot,
blood of the innocent.
Take any shot of DJ Ludacris elf in his DJ booth, and it's just, it's a bad time.
Did you guys stare over the credits and listen to Ludacrismas?
No!
I did not.
Oh, no. All right, I'm going to have to go back and listen to that.
Ludacrismas was a thing from 30 Rock.
All right. Okay, negative 5. I'm just going to say it.
Really? Whoa.
I agree with John now.
I'll give it, negative 5. Fuck it.
Negative 5. Let's do it.
At least really hating something is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
The last thing I'll say about this movie, and we'll end it here, is that Mad Max Fury Road stole a line from this movie, and I've never been angrier about anything in my life.
What was it?
When Saint Nick is born at the beginning of the movie, and his father looks down and says, "He's perfect, perfect in every way."
God, I didn't notice
the same. Like at least this time, the baby was born. In Mad Max, it's just a dead baby, and then Rictus Erectus just says, "He was perfect in every way." And Warner Brothers, I don't know if it was George Miller or just somebody at Warner Brothers, but I have to believe somebody at Warner Brothers recycled that line for Mad Max 4, and that's fucking amazing.
This movie recycles half of Mouse Hunt's soundtrack, so fair's fair.
Yeah, it's just cinematic cannibalism all the way down. So there you have it, folks. Fred Claus is a tortuous experience, and I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. A negative four, negative five on our crankometer.
Yeah. Fuck Vince.
No, I thought it was a 4-5.
Oh yeah, you're right. A 4-5, excuse me, on our crankometer, which Hot is take. About as schizophrenic as it comes.
Hot take: Santa Buddies is better than Fred Claus.
You heard it here first, people.
You heard it here first. I will on the record. Done.
That's Vaughn-a-thon, everybody. We did it. By hook or by crook.
We have to do it again because Vince Vaughn is not allowed to make movies anymore.
He's been relegated to like conservative B-movie hell where he needs to stay. Good Lord. Okay, so that's Fred Claus, everybody. So yeah, next up on the show next month is October, and we're going to be getting into some spooky stuff because we're going home for the horror days. So gird your loins and get ready for that. But until then, until next time, you can get at us on the internet a few different ways. We are on Twitter at Christmas Creeps. You can email us any questions or comments or recommendations for future episodes. We probably won't listen to them because we're very bad at that.
One caveat, if that note is please stop, I mean, tell them to stop making Christmas movies and we'll stop.
Yeah, that's really all there is to it. But you can email those to us at xmascreeps@gmail.com. And go to iTunes, go to YouTube, go to Stitcher, go to Google Play. Those are all places where our podcast is streaming. Like, comment, and subscribe. Smash those buttons and leave us a comment. Let folks know this is a show worth getting into as we grind up for the holidays. That's a bad analogy. Nobody grinds up anything but coffee. As we gear up, excuse me, for the holidays. Yeah, that's Christmas Creeps, everybody. So for Christmas Creeps, I'm Joseph Wade.
I am Johnny Five, the human robot.
And I'm Bradford.
And that's the show.
Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.